AJ, let's pick up again from Operation Saucer here, where these large objects were zapping people and that others were seeing UFOs in the area, I guess, huh?
Yes, yes. So I was telling you that the military from Operation Saucer, they have basically, George, three goals. The Operation Saucer has, including in its documentation, it's written over there, they had three objectives. Now, during the day, this is number one, they would talk to people and retrieve information from the victims and from the witnesses of the sex phenomena or any other phenomena happening in the area. And during the night, they would perform the two other objectives. The second one was to try to document in any way possible through photos, films, whatever, mm-hmm. including with instrumentation, the presence of known terrestrial or unknown origining objects in that area. And the third, this is something that is written in the report of the Operation Saucer, which is amazing. The third is try to get contact with the intelligences.
So that was a goal. They wanted to do that.
They wanted to do that. And guess what? Just when they did it, they shut it off, the Operation Saucer. Now, it started, I was talking on September 1977. During the month of that month of September, almost nothing happened except for the last 10 days. But in October 1977, things start getting hot as the object realized that the military were there for a purpose, and they start approaching closer and closer. Now, during that time, they started taking pictures. But Urangil Landa, the captain of the Operation Saucer, the commander and captain of Brazilian Air Force, he told me that he was frustrated because he has taken hundreds of pictures of a particular type of saucer that he used to say, quote, a sport type, because it was small. It has some particular shape, and it would get, among all the others, it would get closest to the military. And it was very bright, from yellow to white, and with a few parts of the fuselage, the object in with special lights.
Right.
And, well, he tried to make pictures of it many, many times, but when he developed the film, nothing would show. So it was then, by October 1977, that he reported that situation to his commander at the Brazilian Air Force headquarters in Belém, and he was given by some U.S. military that happened to be in that area some different equipment and very sensitive film. And they were given lessons by this military from the U.S. how to operate those cameras and films in order to get the pictures done. So what he then did was to get that equipment he was given and went to the forests, and guess what? He started making pictures that he, when developed the film, could see the objects in it.
Now, were any of these pictures in the files that you got from the Air Force?
Yes, some of them.
Did they look strange?
Yes. Actually, the Operation Saucer resulted in over 500 pictures of UFOs, most of them in black and white. 500 during 4 months period of time. And over 16 hours of footage. That time, there was no video. This has to be Super 8 or Super 16 millimeters
right.
films. And over 16 hours of films were taken. And as to the objective number one, talking to the victims, over 1,000 cases were retrieved by the military. All this material resulted in a 2,000 pages report, of which we have about 250 pages.
Did they come
from several sources?
Did they come to any conclusions here, AJ?
Well, actually, the conclusion is not in the report that we have, And it's not in the report that we saw on the Brazilian Air Force headquartered in Brazil last May 20. Now, when we got there and they showed that material to us, let us examine the material. In that particular file of the Brazilian Air Force Operation Saucer, they had 179 pages only. Now, I have 250 pages of the 2,000 pages of that report. Some of the pages that I had, are some of the pages that I saw in that file in Brazilian headquarters. And some of them are not. So I guess that there are much more than 2,000 that I always guessed. And in that file, we could see over 100 pictures of objects, some of them made in very short range.
Yeah, could you see now, structure to it, AJ, or just lights?
Yes, indeed. You could see structure in this. Some of the objects are disc-shaped, very close, at very close range. Some of them have some parts of the body that you can see very visibly. You can see very clear. And you know what? They start making better and better pictures of UFOs in November than in December. And eventually, in December 1977, with Gil Landa and two of his men, they had the first close encounter with an entity by the Amazon.
All right.
And this is very serious because they were sent there to perform those objectives. And one of them was try to get in touch, to evaluate what kind of intelligence was behind the flying saucers, the objects. And they eventually happened to that point. Urangelanda described that to me very detailedly. He was with these two men and at the river, close to the area where they used to do their surveillance, and all of a sudden, a structured, cylinder-like object, metallic, of over 100 meters in length. Now, this is about 330 feet in length.
Right.
It almost landed on the other side of the same river, but on a vertical position. It was standing on the other side of that bank river. Urangelanda and his two men, they were in a small boat on the opposite bank river. They could see clearly, like when the object just almost touched down in the bank river across them. And from the upper part of that cylinder-like object, a small door was open, and a creature went out of it.
What did it look like?
Just like humans, exactly like us. And they had that creature had proper clothing for the environment, and it was the first of a series of sightings of aliens. It could float kind of close to them, to the military, and they could observe that creature had in his hand some kind of weapon that Urangelanda described to me as being just like a vaccine pistol that is used to inoculate cattle. You're familiar with that?
Yes.
Okay, so this is how he described that thing. And it was a very short contact, and the creature went back to the same door, got into that door, and the object then went away. That was the first time. Now, this is an official operation taking place in the Amazon with one of its top objectives, try to get in touch with the intelligence behind the objects that were being seen and attacking people, and they eventually had that contact with these intelligences.
That's an incredible story.
Absolutely. And when he went to his commander in the headquarter of Belém and told him, it was Brigadier Protásio, who died a few years ago, and he told him, see, you told us to get in contact with them. We did. And when he reported this to his superior reported to the Brasilia, the federal capital, and immediately an order came down from Brasilia to Belém and to Uranjilanda. Shut the operation saucer immediately.
Just
close
it up right there.
Close it up immediately. Get all material, get all the photos, get all the information in one place in this headquarters, and then it was sent to Brasilia. Why? Because it's my reading of this that the Brazilian Air Force understood that what they were dealing with in the Amazon was something very, very heavy, of which they wouldn't have any control whatsoever. So instead of letting the situation reach to a point where they would lose control, they decided to shut it off immediately. But, Georgie, Uranjilanda, the brave man that was the captain of the Brazilian Air Force, mm-hmm. and the commander of the Operation Saucer, he was so convinced that the UFOs over there were for real that they decided to keep on doing his research by himself with few of his men.
He did it quietly.
And he kept going to the same places, and he kept having contact with the objects and eventually with the aliens.
Paula, what's your take on this case?
I'm amazed. I'm absolutely amazed. I think it's so important the people hear what they're hearing from AJ, because this is a worldwide phenomenon, and it's incredible. But I want to ask AJ, what was the message? Was there a message? Was there a communication?
Not that Uranje could understand. Uranje had abductions after that, Paula. And we reached to a point when we met Uranje in June 1997, back 8 years ago. We reached to a point that we are about to get him under time hypnotic regression. And he committed suicide.
Oh, my.
Oh, no.
Or was he murdered?
He was very bad because of that. But you know what? When we talk with the people of the Brazilian Air Force now, on May 20, when you're talking to them about Operation Saucer, that was something that we have been asking our military, our government, to release, they didn't know anything about it. They didn't know who Uranje was. They only have a clue about Operation Saucer. Said, come on, man, you have to know more than you saying you know. Because I know, how come you don't, if you are Brazilian Air Force military? So we started teaching them how the things happened. And they were amazed, these young people from the military that were so receptive and so friendly towards the Brazilian UFO researchers, they were astonished to see what we're describing, things that we just described to you right now, that Uranjilanda, a man in his official position as a captain of the Brazilian Air Force, in an official duty in the rainforest of Amazon, had contact with non-terrestrial creatures.
That's a great story.
And this was official.
And these things were in that file?
No.
Not that part. Okay.
Not that part.
That they kept for themselves, AJ.
Oh, yes. Plus, I guess, George, thousands of other pages and material and maybe pictures. We only know of 500 pictures, of which we have something like 20. I can send you. You can get it in your website anytime you want. Plus the documents. So everybody can see them. Everybody can check by themselves. And see, this is our thing. We want people to know what's going on. We have this information absolutely for free in our website, so anyone can get it and then publish and republish it anytime they please. So what is amazing is that this kind of thing was official. It was officially conducted. And that's something that I have never heard of anything like that in the world. Have you?
No, I have not. How about you, Paula?
No, I've never heard of that, but I have a question. Where did the order come from to shut the operation down? Did it come from
Brasilia?
The prime minister, the military, somebody had to give that order.
Oh, yes. In 1977, we are just after the dictatorship period in Brazil. So the military were running things here. The president didn't say much. It was a military call, a military decision. Probably, but the Brazilian Air Force superior command or something, a jointly decision by both Brazilian Air Force, Army, and Navy, it was decided that the operation should be shut off. Now, it kind of frustrated with Uranjilanda because he was so enthusiastic. He was so excited with the whole thing that he could eventually get in contact with those creatures. And he told us, well, lots of things could come out of that contact. But then the Brazilian Air Force, in a very amazing decision, decided to shut it off. Why? He was frustrated. He kind of had an argument with his superior, Brigadier Protásio, because of that. But as a military, he obeyed, and he shut off the Operation Saucer. But he kept having those moments in which he was doing his research for himself and a few of his men. He kept having contacts, and plus, after that, in his home at Belém, with his family, including this is part of the thing that made him get divorced from his wife, he was abducted during nights. He had these vivid dreams of being taken always by the same kind of guys. And eventually, and I'm telling you something that it shakes me when the, you know, it's something really, really tough in ufology. This man told us that he was having poltergeist phenomena. He could guess what people were talking from kilometers at distance. He could guess what would come after 2 or 3 hours or days or something. He was developing paranormal powers, I think, as a result of his approach to this alien. And this scared to hell his wife and sons. And because of that, his marriage went down. Eventually, he got divorced and moved away from Belém. He went to the northeast of the country. Then he retired. And when he retired, he came to me. Now, this was something very interesting also, because I was in a national network TV program called Fantástico, which means fantastic, which is seen by all over the population. 70% of the population in Brazil watch this program, which means 120, 130 million people. And I was talking back in June 1997, I was talking about the Brazilian UFO documents, official documents, in this program, which is a Sunday night program. And the other day, in the morning, the very morning or Monday, of Monday, this man called me and said, "Hey, AJ, it's Urangio Landa. Remember me?" I said, "Oh, sure, I remember you. I tried to talk to you in Belém back 10 years ago, and you couldn't see me." He said, "Yeah, I couldn't see you at that time because I was on duty on the Brazilian Air Force, but now I'm retired. I have nothing to do with that anymore. And if you want to talk to me, just come over to my place. I'm living in Rio, which is very far away from where I live, George." But after he invited me, I immediately got a ticket and went to Rio and spent 2 whole days with this gentleman in his place in a city called Cabo Frio in the north seashores of Rio de Janeiro. And he was amazing. He described to us in such a level of detailing, such details, all the things that happened during his military time in the Amazon, not only related to UFOs, but things that happened before that and after that, because that man had a great memory. And when it came to UFOs, we recorded hours and hours of his description of everything that happened. Plus, this man draw to us lots of shapes of UFOs that he contacted, including that very one, the very cylinder one that had the alien, that was the first close encounter with aliens that he had.
I tell you what, AJ, that was an incredible case, but there are several more. We'll talk about the UFOs in Brazil and the Virginia case. We'll be back with those, you and Paula Harris, in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And then at the top of the hour, yes, we'll open up the phone line. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with A.J. Gavard and Paula Harris, and we are going to be talking about some specific more cases with A.J. in just a second. Paula, have you ever come to your own thoughts, your own theories on what the UFOs might be? Are they interplanetary? Are they from this planet? Are they time travelers? Are they interdimensional? What are they?
All of the above. I really believe it's all of the above. You know, I have this word for the whole UFO phenomenon, being Italian. I call it a cosmic minestrone, because I've heard what AJ said about the balls of fire and so forth. We've got balls of fire. We have Virginia, which is a very strange case. We have crop circles. We have cattle mutilations. We have sightings. We have creatures. We have people that look like us. And when we get this all together, I think it's very, very complex. I don't think you can make one statement about it all. But I do believe, as J. Allen Hynek believed, that it should be studied seriously. I think it's just all of the above. They're interdimensional. We have interdimensional travel. We have planetary travel, if you believe the story of the Pleiadians, you know, the Billy Meyer case and other cases. And I since I've been there and seen the area and talked to the people in the town, I do believe that case. And the Charles Hall case, the Tall Whites, which we talked about on the Nellis base. We have all these different kinds of phenomenon that is, we lump together as a UFO phenomenon. And it's all of it. It's all of it.
Paula,
and that's what's so interesting.
Excuse me. How did you call this? A cosmic minestrone?
Minestrone.
Cosmic minestrone. Just like soup.
I like it very
just
much.
Just like the soup that has everything in it.
Excellent. Really, really appreciate it. Thank
AJ, a couple more files then that you opened up. One you called the official night of UFOs in Brazil. Tell us a little bit about that.
All right. That happened in May 1986. And it was a situation that ours had the military involved up to their necks. What happened was that during a few hours of May 19th, 1986, over than 20 spheres, huge spheres, non-identified spheres, just jammed the air traffic control radars based in São Paulo, in Rio de Janeiro, Belo Horizonte, São José dos Campos. Now, São Paulo, Rio, and Belo Horizonte are the three major cities in Brazil, and São Paulo is one of the largest cities in the world. And those places were all jammed by over 20, actually 21 balls of light, if you will. And each one of them, we knew later, had a diameter of about 100 meters, which is 333 feet. It's like a block of a city block. Can you imagine a ball like that, in that size, jamming?
Can you imagine 21 like that? That Jaime Maussan showed it at the X conference, the flotillas. Is it like the white balls of light? Were they white?
Yes, something like that, Paula, but in much less number of balls. Like in the flotillas in Mexico, there are cases of 70, 80, 100 balls.
200, yeah.
200 even. I had seen 200. A picture, actually a footage, of over 500. I was amazed to see that. That's something, George, that you have to look into. What is going on in Mexico now?
Oh, sure.
That's fantastic. We've done a great coverage of the Mexican situation here in Brazil after I came from the Laughlin UFO Convention last March, and all UFO researchers here are amazed. And I guess that because of that, our military started looking at the UFO phenomena with different eyes, especially after March last year, when the Sedena, the Secretary of Defense of Mexico, called the UFO researchers, Jaime Maussan and his fellow, to investigate the cases of Campeche.
Well, you know, that was in Laughlin when Jaime said it was 2005 that 500 balls, and they were white, a flotilla, he calls them, were over Cuernavaca.
Sometimes you wonder if they're little orbs. You never know.
Well, the diameter is what I was wondering. How could you measure the diameter, AJ, of the ones you saw?
In Brazil?
Yeah.
Actually, the information about the diameter was something that came to us after a few months it happened. Back in 1986, someone saw a report from the Brazilian Air Force, a very top secret report, where it was given this detail that the diameter of those objects were about 100 meters. Now, let me explain the whole situation so you understand better what happened. Now, during the night of 18th, we had some sightings over Rio and São Paulo. Nothing big, but a few UFOs here and there, chased in commercial airliners or being chased, and sometimes getting close to airports or other sorts of installations. On the 19th, the situation went much, much more intense, with these 21 objects jamming on radars and making airliners to detour, making the airliners to how can I say, instead of landing in airports, waiting in the sky for a few more minutes until the area is cleared so they can land. It happened during a few hours, and a few jets like F-5 and Mirages, French Mirage that we have still some here, they were scrambled, they were sent to pursue these objects from several airfields in Brazil. And all they could do is to get sometimes close to the objects and just to see them to move away at immense speeds. Now, amazingly was that on the other day, the situation was so intense that the Brazilian Ministry of Air Force at that time in 1986, the man was called Brigadier Octavio Moreira Lima. Out of nothing, he decided to go on TV and said, "Oh yes, my fellow Brazilians, I have to tell you that we have this situation. Last night, we have over 20 unidentified objects over Rio, São Paulo, Belo Horizonte, and this and there. And jets were scrambled and this and that. And in the weekend, we're going to have a press conference where the pilots will be able to talk to people about what they saw, the jet pilots." And this actually happened. We had the press conference a few days after that. And all the jet pilots were in this press conference, and they could take questions and answers, and all to say, "We don't know what the hell was those things. We only know that they develop maneuvers and speeds that we have never seen in our lives before, and they are, of course, intelligent."
Wasn't plasma lights, that's for sure, huh?
Well, they could show in the radar, so they were kind of solid, their material.
Yes.
Like in Phoenix, where the explanation is they were flares from the sky. I would love to see a press conference when the Phoenix lights happen, because too many people that are reputable people saw that phenomenon, and there was never a press conference. Instead, what there was I think it was an official who came with a big alien dressed up as a gray and did a press conference. I mean, I think that's the difference about the way we cover things. Something like that is ridicule. Something like what happened in Brazil is serious. There was a press conference of pilots.
Including, during that press conference, the Minister of Air Force of Aeronautics at that time, Octavio Moreira Lima, he promised in 30 days a full report of the situation with all explanations that the military could find about the situation to be given to the public. Now, it never reached the public. I mean, after 30 days, we were all knocking at his door. No report was available to us, not only after 6 or 9 days. We kept waiting years and years and years for that document. But you know what? Just after a few months, after May 1986, the official night of UFOs in Brazil, someone could see that report and some installation of the Brazilian Air Force. And this someone anonymously told us what he read. And he read that 21 objects jammed the airspace of Brazil in the most populated areas, Rio, São Paulo, and between these two cities, there is another one called São José dos Campos, which is the place where military factories are installed, are located, including the Brazilian aeronautics industry, Embraer, who does jets, who does all sorts of airplanes. And the objects were aiming to those locations, Rio, São Paulo, Suzé dos Campos, and Belo Horizonte. And they all had, according to that report, over 100 meters in diameter. Now, if you think of a UFO with 100 meters in diameter, 330 feet in diameter, one, it's enough. Can you imagine 21 of them?
That's a big site. Exactly. Why Brazil, AJ? Why Brazil?
I don't know. I think that there's something that has to be said. Not only Brazil, but places like Chile here in South America, Peru also in South America, and Mexico and North America. These are places where you can find this kind of, how could you say, outrageous.
Could there be an underground base there somewhere, or a base in a mountain that they fly into? Somewhere in that area?
We have no evidence for that as for now, George. We're still searching why. Now, well, the Brazilian people is very open to the subject.
Yeah, I was going to say that,
George.
Especially
the place where I live.
I have asked Jaime Maussan the same thing about the flotillas over Mexico City, which is just now in 2005. And I think that there's a much more, it's a greater opening to the subject, a much greater awareness and acceptance in South America than there is anywhere else. I think when there's that kind of acceptance, I think that the consciousness is part of what causes these sightings.
Okay,
that may be so, Paula. You're right. You know what? Here in South America, we have countries that have experienced a very intense sort of UFO cases. Like, and some of them, including, have opened their files and started UFO committees of investigation with military and civilian. Like, most people don't know. I guess that the United States, very, very few people know. In all American ufology, that Uruguay, one of the smallest countries in South America, Uruguay has started a committee, official committee of UFO research with military from the Uruguayan Air Force and civilian UFO researchers just 26 years ago, almost 30 years ago. How many of you?
Something's going on. Something has got to be going on.
Like 80 years ago, we had Chile, the Civilian Aviation Department in Chile started a committee of investigation of UFOs, official. This is something official that's going on in Chile for 8 years now, and has been doing so in Uruguay for 26 years. Now, Peru and Argentina have started an intention of disclosing UFO files, but they didn't go, didn't succeed. Now, Brazil is starting this, and we're trying to make our military understand that Brazil is the leading country of South America, one of the, it's the fifth country in size in the world. It's becoming one of the world's most important economy. So we have to do something about it. Our territory is huge. We have, and only in the Amazon, we can place almost half Europe in the Amazon itself alone. Now, in this huge territory, with 8,000 kilometers of seashores, we have thousands of sightings all over you look at, George. Wherever you look at, you're going to find UFO sightings. Now, the place where I live, I live in a very beautiful area, which is close to a big swamp called Pantanal. Pantanal is a word that means swamp in Portuguese.
Mm-hmm.
I'm close to the Bolivia border and the Paraguayan border, very down the Amazon. And in my area, which there is a lot of farms, whenever you go, any place you decide to go, you're going to talk to people who have seen objects like 2, 3, 5, 10, 12 times. People who have seen during generations. Now, I have investigated a case in a farm close to here. This farm is in the same family for three generations, And the World Trade Generation have had contact with those objects. It's just amazing.
Do you know if the military, the Brazilian military, ever shot at any UFOs, AJ? Tried to shoot them down?
Well, we don't know about it officially. I mean, we have only a few cases in Brazil of people shooting at UFOs. Like, we have a man in an army installation in the south who was he was a sentinel. He was on guard, and he saw this object coming from the sky, and he got his rifle and shot at it. The bullet came back and reached to his left knee. And because he took too long to be seen by doctors, he had to take his leg off. Now, but this something official from the army. The man decided to act by himself. He decided to shoot at the UFO because he was scared. Now, we have a case that happened in Rio de Janeiro in a military facility by the seashore, in which a UFO is a 40 Itaipu, by the way. Most people can remember and see in the literature. A UFO came closer to this place, and the heat that it was emitting was so strong that the clothes of the military start getting on fire. Some of them died.
Mm.
But we don't know of any official situation in which a Brazilian military has shot at UFOs. I guess some of these cases happened, just like the United States, because we have to remember that, especially from 10 years ago and back, our military read absolutely everything on the U.S. military book.
Sure.
So whatever happened in this area of UFOs and any other area that the U.S. experienced that in the United States, were learned by our military here.
I'm sure we even sent people there to help train the Brazilian military in terms of UFOs.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. In the Virginia case, for example, we have, after a few hours that the case happened, we had military and experts, medical experts sent by the U.S. consulate in São Paulo to Virginia, which is a 3 hours drive, to help Brazilian military to deal with the situation.
They ever talk about the Roswell case in Brazil, AJ? The Roswell, New Mexico case?
Yeah, we speak a lot about it. Yes, but not the military. You mean
just military? Ufologists and people like that.
Yeah, we do. We speak about it. We have this case as a reference. Yes. Yes, so sure. All over the world, the case is a reference.
Well, when we come back at the top of the hour, AJ, let's talk about the final case that they talked with you about, and you, Paul, as well. And I tell you what, we'll also open up the phone lines right now. We'll give you an opportunity to chat with our guests, AJ Javard and Paula Harris, as we talk about UFOs worldwide. I mean, Paul is an expert worldwide. AJ, of course, is in Brazil, and he heads up that entire organization there. Their websites are linked up with their names right now at coasttocoastam.com, so it's very easy to access those websites and get straight through it. And then if you just want to jot it down, write down their web addresses or make it your personal favorites, you can do that as well. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment. Phone calls, continuing the discussion with AJ and Paula.